Do you want to find solutions on how to make decisions faster, how to solve problems with your teams, or define a clear strategy that resonates with your staff and customers? There is a workshop for that. Hello there, I'm Nati Ravez, founder of La Workshoppeuse. I'm a collaboration consultant and workshop facilitator, member of an amazing workshopper community. In this podcast, I meet them to get the best advice on facilitation, and I let leaders and managers speak to understand the challenges they are facing. Welcome to the show. Hello to all of you. Happy New Year 2023. I hope you all had a good transition in this new year, that you maybe have taken the time to reflect on the past year and to plan this new year with new projects, new ideas, new dreams, and perhaps some good resolutions. For my part, I want this year to be a continuation of the previous one. And with that in mind, I am happy to continue hosting this podcast, which I hope will inspire you and give you ideas for your journey in facilitation and collaboration work with amazing guests who share their experiences, challenges, tips, and tools. Today, I welcome Petram Peresmant, co-founder and CEO of the Skills Lab. He has created a program for coaches, consultants, and business leaders who want to learn how to design and conceptualize workshops. And it was a great, great pleasure to talk to him about his background in facilitation, how to create impactful workshops, how to avoid the jargon of facilitation experts, and how to make sure we understand our clients' needs, and also how to make sure we meet them where they are to get them on board correctly and guide them through the right process. Petram also presents his program, The Workshop Mastery, and as a listener of the podcast, you can get a 15% discount on this program. I'll tell you more at the end of this episode, so stay tuned. I hope you enjoy listening, and I look forward to reading your comments and thoughts.
Petram.
Hello.
How are you?
I am well. It's a sunny day here in London.
It's a sunny day in London. I like your accent. It's a nice, the London accent. Maybe I should try. Petram, we met via LinkedIn a few months ago. I think it was like I commented on one of your posts, I think, and you sent me a very nice message. So we made it age, which I skipped because I forgot that we are on two different time slots. But finally, we had this conversation with each other, and we talked about facilitation, we talked about workshop jargon, we talked about training, and I thought, damn, we should have recorded this conversation from the start.
It was a great conversation, I remember.
Could be a good podcast episode. But then I told you, hey, would you like to come on the podcast? And you're here, and I am very, very thankful for that.
Thank you for the invite. Really great to be here. Appreciate it.
Petram, you are a workshop facilitator. You are also the co-founder of Skills Labs, and you help coaches and consultants set up impactful programs for their audience, team, and organization. But if I scroll back on your LinkedIn profile, I can see that you started in a complete different field. You started out as a physics teacher. And it's always very interesting to know what is the journey of the people who are working in facilitation now. So I'm very curious, and I would be very glad if you could tell us a little bit, how did you get into facilitation and set up your business?
I did start off my career as a physics teacher. I studied theoretical physics at university, and And I think for me, really, the genesis comes from wanting to support people, just grow and learn. And I didn't know that I wanted to do that at first, because actually when I did my university degree, All my friends were going into becoming management consultants or investment bankers. And that's what I thought I wanted to do. But for some reason, I missed the memo about getting a part-time job, doing an internship. So when I graduated, I was like highly educated, but completely unemployable. And so I went on this journey of going, okay, how do I develop these like collaboration skills and these like communication skills or leadership skills that all these graduate recruiters are looking for? And yeah, that's when I started to get in. I did some volunteer work. I did a charity expedition. And that's when I started to experience these opportunities or like forums where I'm doing something and I'm reflecting on it myself to like learn about myself. And so when it came down to like getting an actual job, I decided that actually I don't want to be an investment banker. I don't want to do management consultancy. I want to work with people. And so teaching was the first thing that I did. I thought, you know, I could give something back. And I set up like outdoor education for the kids. So we were doing like going out in the countryside. And so I was just really fascinated by growing as like as holistically as people. And so that kind of got me on the track to do leadership development. I trained to be a coach, systems coach. And then, it kind of like grew from there. It was all about how can I help people grow? And it's I've done it in so many different forms with kids, with execs, with new starters in, you know, in business. So I think that's sort of the theme has been helping people grow.
And then you were a teacher. How long?
I taught for 5 years. So in that time, I kind of did a lot of outdoor education, and I got really fascinated by how those kinds of non-formal kind of environments can create opportunities for people to reflect on what just happened. What does that mean for me? What does it mean for me working with other people? And what can I do with it in the future? The stuff that I feel like I kind of missed when I was younger, I was like, really wanted to do that with kids. And then I started doing it with adults. And actually with teachers, I was like, my first bit of like leadership development work was helping teachers be better leaders, you know, not just as like in within the school environment, you know, like, am I a middle leader or a mm-hmm. senior leader, but also like leaders in the classroom.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
And from these things that you recognized, what you like and what you want to do, how is the journey until the foundation of Skills Lab?
Yeah. So quite a lot happened at the same time, actually. So I ended up leaving teaching and I took a little bit of a career break after like 5 years in the classroom. And when I came back, I was like, okay, I want to set up my own business, but I also ended up working for an education charity in the UK called Teach First, which is sort of, that's where I started to do the work with teachers to help them develop their leadership. So I ended up working at Teach First part-time. I set up my own business part-time. And then I also founded one charity called Spark of Metal, which was, we call it like the aspirations agency. So I was like a non-exec director on that. And all of these things were kind of combined, was all around helping to people develop their soft skills, develop collaboration, communication, leadership. So yeah, when I first started doing all my workshops, it was more focused on that aspect. And then since then, it's kind of grew into innovation processes and, you know, using design thinking as an approach to solve problems, but also increasingly kind of blending design thinking with instructional design from my teaching and all the other shiny objects I picked up, like leadership development, systems coaching, storytelling, all these things, which I just love.
Okay. And you are using all this stuff actually to bring other people by how to facilitate, how to design their workshop, or are you still running workshops?
Yeah, a bit of both actually. So, it's this teaching others to kind of think through how to design workshops is quite a new thing for me. I've been doing that formally as a program this year, but informally for many years on the projects I've worked on with colleagues. And I've worked with organizations like Netflix and Google in the tech sector, and you know, the UK Ministry of Justice in the UK as a public sector organization. I've worked with charities during the pandemic, for example, mm-hmm. At the beginning of the pandemic, there was a lot of charities that did a lot of like their programming face to face. And suddenly it was locked down. So I was involved in quite a few different projects, which was helping to go through some digital transformation as well, like the mindsets around and also the practicalities of how do you transition what you do, what you've been doing face to face, but online and all of these things. Yeah, I still get involved in these projects, but actually all the while I felt like I was kind of working with other either colleagues at my level where we're like refining the process or like more junior colleagues who are executing things to help them think through how to design programming, how to design workshops and sort of structure their thinking. So yeah, it's a bit of both. I'm still doing my legacy work as it were, and then also increasingly working with other coaches and consultants to refine how they can do this workshop.
But this is a good thing because I think we can help as facilitators the companies or organizations. But I think this is our role also to bring this facilitation skills to consultants, of course, to coaches, but also to the employees of these companies so that they can work on another level or with new tools. And facilitation is actually not new, but is really needed in this time of change. And you are talking about the digital transformation, about the pandemic, where they had to rethink completely what they were doing.
If you'd like to join me for a podcast episode or discuss the challenges you face at work and how I can help, book a free call or send me an email. All the contact information is in the show notes.
We talked the last time about the fact that when we are as facilitator experts working with organization, with companies, with coaches, with consultants, and that we should try to speak their language. Can you remember?
Yeah.
Because
because
in your expertise, you forget sometimes that the other people are not talking the same language like we are, and that this is one thing that we have to focus on as a facilitator. And I think this is something that you bring by the people you are coaching, right?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, I've gone on a bit of a journey with this because I, you know, every time I've learned something new, some new training, for example, when I learned to be an organizational relationship systems coach 6 years ago or so, there's so much like terminology there, which I really loved. You know, there's like the third entity when you're thinking about like what happens when you bring a group of people together, or the three levels of reality and how you can like work between essence level to dreaming level and consensus reality. Like these are like words I was like, cool, I've got like a new language. But actually, I mean, as I said it, you're probably thinking, what the hell is Ped talking about? I don't have an idea. I can guess what these things mean, but I don't really know. And so it can be really tempting when you're an expert, when you're a coach, consultant, facilitator, to like use these words unintentionally. You know what it means, and with a little bit of education, you can explain to your clients what they mean. But it can also just be a little bit of a barrier. So I try to absolutely use these things as a mental framework for me to think about how I design workshops. But if I'm delivering something, I'll think about what other ways I can describe it that's more simple. And if I can't, I'll make sure I give some time and space to be able to share, okay, I'm going to use a word, this is what it means, and like make sure that people are on the same level. But that's one aspect of like jargon. But I also think that sometimes as facilitators or workshop designers, we sometimes can carry quite a bit of a burden of needing to like have all the answers mm-hmm. of like this is what you need. Or and I know that as facilitators, we also hold that it's our clients that bring the content and they come up with the answers themselves. But it's you sort of there's a little bit of I don't know what how to call it, like a residue of wanting to feel like you're adding value by knowing everything. But actually, you got to let go of that. And I think sometimes, even if you know what the even if you've seen the same problem many times, it's experienced slightly differently in each organization and each people. So how one group of people might describe their challenges, their problems, might be different from another group. And it's about finding a way of hearing or uncovering how your this new group that you're going to be working with experiences their challenges, their problems, or what they want to solve, and speaking their language, because the mechanics of how you help them get there, it's like your expertise, but you can also demonstrate your expertise by really kind of understanding who they are, what's going on for them, and meeting them where they're at. And I think that also builds more trust, because they go, oh, you get me, you understand what's going on for me, you're using my language, and instead of using language that is exclusionary, like jargon.
Yeah. Is it the point that this is maybe the difference between a workshop facilitator and a consultant? Because this is something I have both missions. I'm working in the both fields. And this is what you're telling. You are not here to propose some solution like a consultant. You're here as a workshop facilitator. It means you are the guide and they are the heroes. And you really have to change your mindset when you are working as a workshop facilitator. And this is what I like the most, to get the people mm-hmm. and get from them the answer. And when you are a consultant, you are in another role. This is something different. Like a project manager is also another role. So I have discovered for myself that workshops can be a very good start for a consulting mission. Because you are doing a workshop and getting the collection choose on what they want to work and things like that. And then you can start as a consultant.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think there's a blurry line between things as well. So sometimes some projects will require you to be a consultant and then run a workshop where you're a facilitator in the truest sense to collect that information, mm-hmm. Either at the beginning or at different points. And then you can... and it also depends on the project and the consultancy. And then once you've collected all that, then you bring in your like subject matter expertise or your technical expertise and offer like the next step, the next thing you're doing. But the mind, I guess I haven't thought about this, but it's the mindset of facilitation, isn't it? It's like it's when you're working with a group of people, you have to assume that they and hold that they are. And I'm going to use a phrase from some of the training that I've done myself, like they're naturally creative and resourceful. Like they have access, that's from Coactive Training Institute, but they have access to the knowledge and wisdom to solve their own problems. And you're there to guide them, to like provide the guide rails.
Yeah.
And if there's something missing, you can always like add to it and go, and here's this like other thing that can help you.
We were talking also about the fact how important it is to have a human-centered approach in the designing of workshops, how important that is. Yeah. You can remember how conversation... I tried to reproduce the conversation we had a few weeks ago.
Love it. Take two.
Take two. Yeah, but you can remember we talk about human-centered approach to designing workshops.
Yeah.
And this is something that you teach also.
Whether people recognize the term human-centered design or not, and there's a lot of people, I'm just going to do a side point and then bring it back because actually I think it's important. There are three types of workshops that I think are out there. There's skill development workshops, which is, it can still fall in that kind of training category, but you're offering like an opportunity for people to learn a new skill, but like in a kind of guided sense, helping them make sense of it themselves. Then there's like team or personal growth workshops. It's like you're helping people work better with each other. And then there are like innovation workshops, like innovation processes, helping people create something together. So those are like three different types of workshops. So I know that in the innovation space, there's a lot more of this sense of like user-centered like design or like human-centered design. Now, regardless of which type of workshops you're kind of running, I still like I've experienced and seen that even if you know about human-centered service design, when it comes to designing a workshop, people don't always take a human-centered approach to thinking about who's in the workshop. Mm-hmm. You might be human-centered approach of like who you're designing a product or a service or a solution for, but we fail for the people who are coming to the workshop. And so I always say that oftentimes we care about the people we're designing a workshop for, but we don't always take a human-centered approach to like how we think through that workshop. And it might not even be like any more complicated than just thinking about what's the context of this workshop? Who are the people that are coming? What do they do? What's not working for them that could be better? What do they want to achieve in their work or their lives? And then that's like the framing. You know, you could still do the same activity with a different group of people, but just like the framing of it can be more human-centered, more kind of learner-centered, or depending on what type of workshop you're doing. So yeah, that's I can't remember if that's what we talked about last time, but that's
no, but it's so true. And in the meantime, I told you I had last week a workshop, a little bit challenging because it was two teams meeting for the first time from Germany and from France, not speaking the same language. With two people remote from Pakistan and Turkey, some of the people not talking really good English, and one person mm-hmm. not talking at all. She can listen and she can do everything, but not talking at all. I started with my co-facilitator to design the workshop, like, okay, we will do that in English, no problem, and start with the icebreaker, like all the French people are reading loud a German word, which is on the screen, and then all the Germans are talking the same word in French, and it was very funny. But we forget one fact, is that one person cannot talk. So what can we do with this person? You know, and it was not a big thing. This was the only activity that the person cannot talk, but it was very important to talk to this person before, so that she is mm-hmm. not, because it was one of the beginning activities, so that she don't have the feeling that she is put on the side or nobody recognize that she's. And this is the thing when we are talking about human-centered approach, not even if you are doing always the same workshop, the same recipes, you have really not to forget to know before who is in the room. Who is in the room?
Yeah, it's about meeting people where they're at. And I think, and sometimes it's, you can find, excavate this beforehand. Sometimes you can't, and you got to like build in the opportunities to have people check in, share how they are, what they want to get out of the session, etc., or like what's important about the session for them. But also, I think you raise an important point about inclusion in terms of who's in the room and whether they're able to speak or not, you know, because the even things like, especially for remote workshops, knowing what kind of devices people are going to be joining with. Now, typically in a kind of work environment, you can be pretty safe that people are going to show up on a laptop or a desktop computer. Mm-hmm. And then you can use things like an interactive whiteboard or other digital tools for your workshop. Now, when I was doing the projects during the beginning of the pandemic, helping charities think about how they reach their service users, their beneficiaries, it really, that understanding who the users were was so important, because some of them worked with, you know, old people. Some of them worked with young people. Some people only had a mobile phone and no computer. You know, some people had limits on how much data they were able to access on their mobile phone. So, you know, we had solutions like WhatsApp courses, you know, a course delivered on WhatsApp. We had other solutions around, maybe just very simple, like things like how can you use Zoom better, but also, you know, thinking about Facebook. So some things, some of the solutions were using Facebook groups as a way of like reaching people, because that's actually where a lot of their service users were. So yeah, it can get really just very interesting in terms of just how where the solutions can go depending on how people are accessing things. It's like not what we're talking about now in terms of workshops, but in terms of other kind of services, other programs and interventions.
Yeah.
Those things are fascinating.
Feel free to click the bell to subscribe this podcast on your player. You can also follow me on LinkedIn for more information on facilitation and workshops.
You have developed your own workshop program. I think the name is Workshop Mastery Program. And I recognized a few people that I know. I think we are almost in the same communities. I think you have a Canadian woman in your group. Is it possible?
Yeah, we do. We commented on the LinkedIn post. Of course you two know each other. You're both awesome people.
Marie-Christine. Hello, Marie-Christine, if you are listening.
Hello.
So would you like to tell us more about your workshop mastery and how we can get more information about that? What is in the in this program specifically, and how can someone register for this program? This would be my last question.
Yeah, thanks. You know, I think we started to talk about this already, but a lot of us that get into workshops and designing workshops or facilitating workshops, it sort of it happens like it to us, or we go and experience a good workshop. You know, I want to do this, or you go on a training program and you collect various tools, various activities, principles, and then we start putting them together. You know, we learn the tricks of the trade. We use our intuition. And we actually oftentimes get experience like success running workshops. But what I've noticed, because I went through this, even though I was a teacher to begin with, even I, with like my kind of teaching background, there was still a lot of like, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? This was slow going to figure out what's the best like process to like structure my thinking in order to just design a workshop. And sometimes I would be inventing and reinventing the process. I'd like learn something new. I'm like, how do I incorporate this like approach, this principle to like how I design workshops? So, and I know that a lot of other coaches and consultants can spend a lot of time doing the same thing, inventing, reinventing the process, questioning themselves, getting frustrated. I hear people feeling overwhelmed, maybe procrastinating around like sitting down to design. And so this program is really just, I see it as a big yes and. It's there to support people who already do things, just structure their thinking so they can spend more time delivering value. You know, so it's about what's my tagline? Like it's something like, you know, creating high value, high impact workshop that your clients rave on about. Like, because I think that's what I don't know, like checking with myself and I check in with other people that do this kind of work. That's what we want, right? We want to create impact. So that's the idea behind it.
And how long is when you sign in and you are new? What can you find there? How many, is there many modules? Is there some videos? Oh, yeah. Is there some coaching calls? Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah. So it's a 90-day training and coaching program, that sort of helps to, like I said, to save you time and sort of that mental anguish. So you can be better at positioning, whether that's actually selling something or if it's already like it's part of a project, like getting people excited, designing and then facilitating like that process. So yeah, we've got a collection of instructional videos that you work through in your own time. You've got the templates, all those things that you can kind of structure to help you structure your thinking. And then twice a week, we have a drop-in session where you can come, ask any questions about the process, share what you've done, get feedback from others on the program, get feedback from me, celebrate your wins. So it's like a bit of a holistic program where you're getting the content as well as the support and the community. And yeah, I've been running it since April. So it's kind of, it's evolving and it's growing. And every time somebody comes on, like for example, yesterday we had a wonderful session and Mary Christine had some awesome questions that we collectively worked through around proposal writing, although that's not part of the program, but it's we've had a good conversation about proposals because we're all experts in terms of we've done proposals and it was just such a fruitful conversation. But also we talked about what makes a transformational experience. We talked about, why it's important to really be clear about who a workshop is for. And so, yeah, we it's like that environment. I can't always predict what will happen, but we have such great conversations and they inspire me to, refine my own thinking, but also what I share in the world. So, I know we met on LinkedIn, mm-hmm. right? So oftentimes these conversations that we have inspire a LinkedIn post.
Yes.
I'm like, that's such a great question. I'm going to make that a LinkedIn post.
And your eyes are so brightening when you're talking about that. So you love what you're doing. This is what I really like when someone is coming on the podcast.
Yeah, and I love working. I mean, I also don't proclaim to say that I'm, I see myself as, in these environments, the program, I am a colleague and I have a framework and I have a model that I share and help people grapple through. But just like facilitation, I also kind of recognize that the people that come, like Mary Christine, who is an absolute expert in her domain. Mm-hmm. She's so experienced and brings so much to the table. So it is, it's a big yes and. So there's a workshop design mastery program because I see it as it's a forum for all of us to just become more masterful.
Yeah.
Masterful at what we do. Yeah.
So it means also that when someone is signing your program, they will get in contact with very experimented other people. And it's also about sharing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's it's wonderful having, I feel on, it's something. How do I feel about this? I feel honored.
Yeah.
Whenever people kind of join, because there's so much experience and wisdom that they bring to the collective.
Nice. Thank you, Vedram. We finally did the interview.
Yeah, recorded this time.
Thank you very much. I will put all the contact information in the show notes. And I wish you a bigger and bigger community for your program. And thank you very much.
Excellent. Yeah, I really enjoyed being on this. Thanks for inviting me and look forward to you coming to London.
Yeah, I will. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode. And to finish it off with even more value, there are several bonuses for you. Firstly, you can download Vedram's free facilitation guide, which is a simple framework for an intuitive workshop facilitation structure. The link to download it is in the show notes. Secondly, Vedram is offering a 15% discount on the Workshop Mastery program to listeners who book a consultation call and then sign up for the program. To do this, simply type, "There's a workshop for that," in the "How did you hear about us" section in the survey of the call for consultation. You can find the program homepage with more information and a booking link in the show notes. In the next episode, I have the great, great pleasure to talk to Jakob Knudsen, the co-founder and CEO of Butter. Butter is the platform to use to run more engaging remote sessions and get better outcomes from your remote meetings and workshops. Jakob's passion is truly infectious. So don't miss this episode. And until then, I wish you health, success, and happiness. Au revoir.